Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking a deep dive into one of the most ethically challenging and frankly urgent fields in human services.
We really are. We're talking about the protection of vulnerable adults.
Specifically, the Operational Blueprint for Adult Protective Services Caseworkers, or APS. And we've pulled two fascinating yet seemingly contradictory sources for this.
That's right. And that's really the core of the tension we're exploring today. On one hand, we have a New York State Protective Services for Adults Desk Guide.
The rule book.
Exactly, the rule book. All rigid legal procedures, punishing timelines. And on the other hand, we have this executive summary detailing a training called Purpose-Driven Engagement.
Which is all about the soft skills, right? Building trust.
All soft skills.
So our mission today is to understand how these caseworkers reconcile those two realities. I mean, they're intervening with adults 18 and older who have a mental or physical impairment and are at, you know, a grave risk of harm.
Right, whether that's neglect, abuse, or exploitation. And what the sources reveal is this fascinating truth. The success of the hard law, it hinges entirely on mastering the soft skills.
So you're saying they have to be a diplomat, a detective, a social worker.
And potentially an expert legal witness all at the same time. You have to remember, they are entering people's lives at the absolute worst possible moment.
And the client is often resistant or even actively hostile.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's start with that philosophy that's supposed to guide every move they make, purpose-driven engagement. The training summary, it really doesn't mince words. It calls communication the, quote, critical variable for success in human services.
It has to be. I mean, if you think about the legal constraints these professionals operate under, which we'll get into, they are so heavily restricted in using force or involuntary intervention.
The law itself pushes them towards persuasion.
And it insists on it.
Yeah.
The law mandates they use the least restrictive intervention possible.
You bet.
What that really means is the caseworker must convince the client to voluntarily accept help.
So if they can't build that rapport, that trust.
They fail. They fail to meet the legal standard, the case stalls, and the vulnerable adult might be left in harm's way.
So engagement isn't just about, you know, being nice. It's the only real tool they have to unlock a successful intervention.
It's their primary non-lethal weapon, to put it bluntly, especially when they need to get into a person's home or access their medical records.
Which leads right into the core values of their training.
It does. Things like client-centered advocacy, effective engagement, situational awareness.
And cultural awareness. Let's pause on that one for a second. Why is that specifically called out as foundational?
Well, because without it, you can't really have client-centered advocacy. Imagine a caseworker walking into a home where the adult's resistance is rooted in, say, deep cultural norms about family privacy.
Or maybe historical trauma related to government intervention.
Exactly. If the caseworker just sees that as hostility instead of, you know, a culturally informed protective mechanism communication just,
yeah,
it breaks down instantly.
So this training is about making sure the way services are offered is just as important as the services themselves.
It transforms a resistant client into a potential partner.
That sounds like a huge investment in training. I mean, is that level of training actually sustainable for an agency?
Well, that's where the sources really shine a light on the institutional commitment. They recognize you can't learn this in an afternoon.
Right.
They offer these really flexible formats. You might have a one-day intensive, sort of a foundational overview. But the real work, the deep integration, happens in the full program.
Which is how long?
7 to 10 sessions. Mm-hmm. It combines in-person, hybrid, self-paced, all of it. Mm-hmm. They really treat mastery as a continuous process, not some final destination.
So the value proposition isn't just we get better at talking. It's more like we get better outcomes and our caseworkers don't burn out.
That's it, exactly. Strong communication leads to better client outcomes, which means more voluntary interventions. And, critically, it keeps caseworkers safer by giving them tools to de-escalate situations.
Okay, so we've established the job requires the sensitivity of a counselor. Now let's transition to the statutory rigidity, the hard law.
Right. Moving from the art of engagement to the strict science of eligibility.
So the PSA Desk Guide, it lays out three absolute criteria for taking a case.
Yes, and it's a balancing act you see in many states. They're weighing the vulnerability of the client against any existing support system.
So walk us through those checks for New York State.
Okay, first, the person has to be an adult, 18 or older, with a physical or mental impairment. And it's important to note this is not based on income.
Okay.
Second, they have to be in need of protection from actual or threatened harm. So they're unable to get food, shelter, medical care, or they can't protect themselves from, say, abuse or financial exploitation.
And that third requirement, it sounds like it's the real gatekeeper here, the one that decides if the government steps in.
It's the ultimate filter, yeah. The adult must have no one available who is willing and able to assist them responsibly.
So if there's a competent relative already helping out,
then APS cannot intervene. It ensures they are truly the service of last resort.
Okay, so once eligibility is established, then the assessment is guided by three mandatory core principles. This sounds like that tightrope walk you mentioned.
It is a profound ethical challenge. So, principle one is fundamental. The right to self-determination.
The right to make your own choices.
Exactly. Adults have the right to exercise free choice, even if those decisions look to us like they're self-harming or just unwise.
So APS has to use persuasion. They can't just force their way in because they disagree with someone's life choices.
That's it. So if a capable adult is choosing to live in conditions that seem deplorable, but they understand the risks and they accept them, APS might be legally barred from intervening.
The person's right to choose trumps the caseworker's idea of their best interests.
It does, unless the other principles get triggered.
And the second principle is about minimizing intrusion.
Yes, the least restrictive interventions mandate. Services have to be limited in scope. If they can keep the person safe in their own home, they must. If they do have to find an alternative place to live, it has to be the environment that least restricts their freedom.
Which brings us to number three, the one that lets the system finally override self-determination.
That's the authority to intervene. This is the razor's edge. PSA can only provide involuntary services if two conditions are met. One, there is an imminent risk to safety.
Okay.
And two, the adult is incapable of making decisions for themselves because of a documented mental impairment. That's the pivot point. That's where diplomacy ends and the legal process takes over.
And when that imminent risk is identified, we go from measured persuasion to a frantic timeline. The clock starts ticking immediately.
The timelines dictate everything. For an emergency referral, a life-threatening situation, the investigation has to start as soon as possible, but no later than 24 hours after they get the call.
24 hours? That's an incredible constraint. How do you possibly build trust and use all those sensitive engagement skills from part one?
You can't.
When you have a legal deadline to start investigating within 24 hours.
It means those engagement skills have to be deployed with just instantaneous effectiveness. There's no time for a slow burn. The approach has to be purposeful and immediately goal-oriented.
And for non-emergencies.
A little more forgiving. Investigation within 72 hours and a client visit within 3 working days. But the pressure is still intense.
So that initial home visit is the critical moment. The source emphasizes the caseworker must be safe, not just feel safe. What are some of the practical precautions they mandate?
Well, beyond the obvious things like, you know, noting exits or having a charged phone, the guide instructs them to leave immediately if they see drugs, firearms, or active violence.
That makes sense.
And crucially, they're told to always trust their instincts. Never let anyone get between them and the door. It's all part of that situational awareness training.
Right, because that visit has two purposes. Build the relationship, but also gather hard facts from the environment, from neighbors, from anyone.
Exactly. And given the stress, agitation is just. It's standard. So the de-escalation strategies are very tactical.
Like what?
Maintain a calm demeanor, use a modulated, low, monotonous tone of voice.
I found the advice on handling hostility really interesting. It says never be defensive. Remind yourself that the insults aren't really about you.
It's about the client's fear or their crisis, mm-hmm. right? And the physical directives are so specific. Never turn your back. Allow extra space. Avoid constant eye contact, which can feel like a challenge.
It's all about control through calmness, not dominance.
Exactly.
But what if? What if that all fails? The best communication, the lowest tone of voice, and you still get nowhere. What happens when someone just refuses you access to the home?
That refusal is a major legal trigger.
Yeah.
So after trying to use neighbors or getting a supervisor's advice, if there's reasonable cause to believe the person needs services but access is still denied, PSA can go to court.
For what?
For an order to gain access, yeah. Or an OGA.
The guide calls it a civil search warrant.
It's functionally the same. The court has to be convinced. If it is, the OGA authorizes PSA, sometimes with law enforcement, to enter the premises. But, and this is a critical legal caveat that reinforces that right to self-determination.
Okay.
The OGA is only for assessment. You cannot remove a person or treat them involuntarily under that order. It just gets the caseworker through the door to see what's going on.
That distinction is huge. you can forcibly assess, but not forcibly remove.
Right. But if that assessment confirms the worst imminent risk of death or serious physical harm, that's when the most extreme measure kicks in.
Involuntary emergency services.
This is the absolute crisis point.
Yeah.
Imminent risk plus an impairment that prevents the person from understanding that risk, then PSA can apply for authority to provide involuntary services.
Including removal to a hospital or shelter.
Yes, but only for a highly restricted 72-hour period. It can be renewed once. It's really a stopgap measure, just to preserve life long enough to figure out a longer-term legal strategy, like guardianship.
With all this potential for police, court orders, involuntary removal, the documentation must have to be airtight.
Absolutely. The need for meticulous records is one of the biggest burdens. The progress notes, documenting every contact, every observation, they have to be done as soon as possible, but always within 30 days of the event.
And these aren't just notes for the file.
No, not at all. The sources emphasize these records can be subpoenaed. If your notes are late or inaccurate, you could jeopardize the entire case in court. Every single observation, every attempt at de-escalation, it all becomes legal evidence.
It's so clear that the APS caseworker is operating in this unique space. They have to pivot seamlessly between being an expert relationship builder and an enforcer of strict legal code.
And all under these incredibly urgent timelines. Their success really depends on an ability to switch roles without missing a beat.
And that profound difficulty is why the system offers them certain protections.
It is. Caseworkers who provide these services are granted immunity from civil liability as long as they were acting, you know, in the discharge of their duties and within the scope of their employment.
So as long as it wasn't a willful act or gross negligence?
Exactly. This legal shield acknowledges that in balancing a person's freedom with the obligation to save their life, mistakes can happen. And professionals have to be protected from constant lawsuits for just doing an impossibly difficult job.
It truly reflects the gravity of the decisions they face every single hour.
It does. And it really forces you, the listener, to reflect on that core tension. The best interest standard, what a professional thinks is ideal, versus the right to self-determination.
The client's right to choose.
All right, so think about this. When you're faced with a resistant client who is clearly in crisis, how does a professional accurately document and ultimately prove to a court that the least restrictive service alternative is truly being used, especially when the client's free choice seems to be leading directly to their own death or serious harm?
That ambiguity is what defines the job. A very compelling and sobering thought. Thank you for walking us through this deep dive.